You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast that you're listening to right now. It's me, Mike Carrozza, your boy. Hello, welcome back. It's the first mailbag episode of the year. No, I'm kidding. It's the first mailbag episode of the year with a guest. And we're going to get there very soon. First, I got to introduce our co-host. We got Morgan Sanchez in the building. What's up, Morgan?
What's happening, Mikey? I'm coming out of my freezer and I'm doing just fine.
Hell yeah. Started out with a kiss. How did it end up like this? It was only... Nobody else heard Mr. Brightside when you started it?
Here it was only All a right. kiss.
Thank you, guest. We'll get to you soon. You'll be introduced shortly. Michael Solani, also here. Hello, Michael.
Hi, I just kind of came out of my fridge, and I'm feeling just fine.
I hate that that's the funniest thing. I hate that
there wasn't
was
room
right
for
move.
Both of us in the freezer. I kicked him out. That's why he had to go yeah. for it. It's not as cool as I am. That's all he's trying to say here. Like,
luckily,
he can't say it like that, so he said he was in the fridge. I'm in the freezer because I'm cooler.
It was one of those side-by-side fridges with the French doors, which is very nice because the last time this happened, it was one of those stacked ones with the freezer on the bottom. And let me tell you, that was not comfortable.
Not comfy. But Michael, let me ask you something. Check your audio. You're coming in through a different microphone than the one you think you're coming in through.
Nope,
while you do that.
Definitely recording on this mic.
Yeah, your Zoom sounds like a room mic.
Ken. I'm blaming Ken for this.
How dare you? He has nothing to do with your setup.
Yes, he does. He has everything to do with my setup. Hold on a second.
Lean in closer, maybe. That'll help a little bit, I think.
No, it is, in fact, the webcam.
Nailed it. Go yourself,
there we go.
Solani. Sorry, Ken.
Sorry, Ken.
And now, while Michael's figuring out... now we can't hear him. It's on mute. While Michael figures himself out, we're going to introduce our guest for today's episode. Or rather, I'm going to let him introduce himself. Guest, tell everybody who you are and what they know you from.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tyler Saves Ya Bucks. I am the host of the Magic YouTube channel, The Pillow Fort, where I cover all budget stuff and do sketch comedy. I'm also a writer for EDH Rec. I'm not Mr. Brightside. I'm just the guy that saves you money when you're playing Magic.
Hell yeah. I will say... It took me so long to realize that Saves Ya was Saves Ya and not Saves Ya, where I was like, all right, homie went through some kind of journey, picked out a new name for himself, but he's got to use Tyler Bucks because he's committed to the writing name. I was just like, okay. But then I think I watched a video you posted and I was like, that makes a lot more sense.
It makes so much more sense when you can see me doing the money hands with my fingers,
absolutely.
Which people can't see right now, but trust me. And you're not the first person to call me Cerveza Bucks.
Cervesia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
the government Cervesia. Name.
the government name.
Yeah.
Tyler Cervesia Bucks.
We don't say that one out loud. That's why it saves you. It's like, you know, it's a whole
I
thing.
I see.
Yeah.
We're figuring it out. Well, Tyler, you are also a writer for EDH Rec, and you do save people bucks because, tell you what, you're the budget guy over on EDH Rec. You're out here looking, sniping for that good stuff before it spikes. I tell you what, some of the stuff you pick out ends up going up because there's such good includes, and they're so obscure, they become a little popular, which is pretty fun.
That's my favorite thing to do. I've been doing it since I had budget problems myself. And hey, I still do sometimes. Check out my YouTube ads, please. But those are skills I learned out of necessity. And I love passing them along because finding interesting niche budget cards is a real passion of mine. Okay.
It's a lot of
fun. It's not just my middle name saves you. It's just a passion of mine.
You it's know what passion. I also love too, Tyler, that you do that I am personally super interested in is the best like commons and uncommons articles because your girl is opening packs and I don't know what to do with half of the crap that's in there. And I'm just like, I need Tyler to tell me like which ones to put aside and like just keep in a little pile for a little something something,
it has
right?
Been
like
helpful.
Those are my favorite articles.
Yes, bulk up the best commons and uncommons from every set. I've been doing it since Foundations. Thank you for EDH Rec giving me that platform to do it. And yeah, it's helped me in order to go through my own bulk and be like, hey, actually, some of these commons are really good and uncommons.
Oh, yeah.
But also, it makes it really interesting during pre-release, because when I play people and they play a mythic or a rare, I go, what does that do? Because I've looked at zero mythics and rares of new sets. I just look at the commons and uncommons. Someone plays a random 3-mana draw 2. I'm like, oh, I know what that is.
Spoken like a limited player, I'll tell you what. I only look at the commons and uncommons. I learn about the rares when it's time. Come on.
That's not... I've been known to play limited, but that's not where it's at. Don't we need to get to sponsors?
Yeah, speaking of saving bucks, it's time for our sponsor segment. Our first sponsor, as always, is Cardsphere.com. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Use the referral link in the description to join the website. Start trading away your cards. Things that you want are available online to trade for. Your cards are your wallet, but also your wallet's your wallet. You know what I mean? You could buy cards for people. You could trade cards to people. You can send cards, receive cards, however you want to do it. You can get product. I mean, Morgan's holding up a Lorwyn. A blurred Lorwyn.
It's copyrighted. We can't show the image Morgan, even to each other privately.
You're getting copyright struck. Morgan, we only get three of those before the YouTube video gets, our YouTube channel gets thrown out.
Yeah.
They charge us $25,000, the FTC.
You know how we love to include a video with the YouTube version of this. But,
Morgan, could see the Lorwyn that's blurred out.
You can't do it. Morgan, it's been a minute since we've had an update on your Odyssey Block project. Has there been any movement on that featuring the help of the gang from Cardsphere?
I have some bad news when it comes to that because of late, I have a thing. I say bad news as somebody who is very particular, right? This is not bad news in terms of the logistics of everything, but I have had some stuff sent to me that I have had to send back because it has foil cut lines, which is like a no-no for my collection. I'm very particular. Also, it says that in the little blurb before you send the card that I would appreciate no foil cut lines. Please don't send the card, even if it's otherwise near mint. Odyssey had a huge problem with that. So that entire block did. And I think just that kind of like era of early 2000s, like old border foils just had like some weird cut lines. Some of them are like not super crazy, but others it's like you can very distinctly tell the color shift is like completely different. Don't like them. They are considered a fun little misprint. Unfortunately, there are people that exist that do like them. Give them
not
to them.
Unfortunately. Fortunately, give it to them.
That's
versus
right.
You.
Unfortunately.
But I bet... It's pretty easy to communicate with folks on Cardsphere and get sorted out and make sure that you're no harm, no foul. Everybody gets what they
absolutely.
Need.
Absolutely. It's always really easy. People don't read the card. You can't expect them to read the send blurb, so go figure.
Yeah, reading the card means read the blurb. Anyway, Cardsphere.com. Join a community. Get your cards here. Use the referral link in the description. Also sponsoring us this episode is BoneBoxGames.com. BoneBox Games. They make great deck boxes. You can get yourself a discount code BULLCAST. Put that in as you're checking out and get yourself a little something off the price. And with that, we're done with sponsor talk, baby. It's time to chat with our guest. And then we're going to dive into a little mailbag. We don't got a box for that. It's a bag.
We could get a box. It's all aesthetics, right?
So now we're going to get into talking to our guest, Tyler Saves You Bucks. Writer for EDH Rec, known for the
Pillow Fort. Can I ask you a question, Tyler?
Yes, of course.
Are you afraid of going to a bar and seeing Big Game Hunter or Big Buck Deer Hunter? What is that game called, Morgan? Is it because your last name is Bucks, right? So you
Why
have
are
to
you
assume. Because I think that you're more likely to know the answer to that question than Mike DeRosa.
I'm going
to
be honest. Of the four of us, you do seem more like you've hunted. Yes.
I have not. For what it's worth, it's like a fun little card I can play that, like, I have the vibe, but I've never done it.
You're a hipster.
Well, very true. Yeah. Anytime I go out, I have to wear orange just to show people that I'm indeed not a deer. I'm a human. And I have to remind that to people all the time. Even people have known me for years.
Deer.
I'm glad that you understand that, because 3-3 elk sure doesn't.
I am multiple deer, male deer, actually. It's a weird life that I've had to live. But you
hence
know,
the government name and the
I've known your identities, trust me.
Right. Thus pointing people in the direction that the last name means money, not deer, but still I see like laser sights on my chest every once in a while. I dive under cars. It's a whole thing. Thank you for bringing it up, though. Yes, it happens.
It's those Watsy hunters. They've set the Pinkertons after you. Yeah,
that's they. Well, see, Pinkerton with a snipe? I don't believe it. The laser sight? I don't believe it. They're up close and personal, those ones. Anyway.
The laser dot is pink colored.
Yeah.
Pink colored as it would be, as opposed to just pink. It's pink colored.
No, it isn't exactly. It's not pink. It's because it's pink colored.
Pinkish.
You said it. Pinkish. There we go. So now let's let Tyler talk. Tyler, how about you tell us a bit about your... What kind of commander you like to play? Because obviously you write on EDHREC.com. And I'd like to ask you if you maybe got a story where you might have been the bolus, or you have a magic pet peeve that we can chat about before we dive into this mailbag.
So three questions. I'll tackle them one by one. So nice. The type of commanders and commander I like to play. My favorite commander in my arsenal is Shadrick's Silverquill. And if people don't know Shadrick's Silverquill... You get to choose two things, give a counter to all creatures someone controls, a token, or have someone draw a card, lose a life. And that is my favorite type of commander. Being interactive, I hate seeing people mana screwed, all that type of stuff, but I like being in control of it. You know, I host the Pillow Fort on YouTube, and pillow forting in Magic is a whole thing. I like to be in control of it. I don't like to just give cards out to people willy-nilly. Right. I give them, you know, reasons to attack people or whatever.
It's a political strategy, not a group hug strategy.
I mean, I'll hug a group, but I've got to have a reason to do it. And yeah, Shadrick's gives me that, and I'm able to, at the end of the day, if deals go south, I can hit people with a giant double-striking dragon. So I love playing that type of commander. In terms of having, like, say, a pet peeve, I do play limited. I do go to pre-releases.
That's my pet peeve too.
Going to limited, I know. Especially
yeah, limited is just yeah.
And I am right there with you until I started doing it and realized I really did enjoy it. But
they're like drugs.
Yes, my friends and my playgroup wanting to do drafts is the gateway drug that brought me into being at every pre-release, shoulder to shoulder with people, trying to open a bunch of packs and realize there's no synergy here, and I'm locked in for the next 4 hours.
Play booster era.
Oh my gosh, brutal.
No, you just play the weird list cards. That's still a thing, right? Is the list still around?
No.
No, it's been long gone. We've got
Does the list exist?
We got the special guests.
We need a website like, is the list still a thing? Just like that website that was like, is Abe Vigoda dead? And make it said no website. For the longest time, but then he died, and then it says yes.
You make websites. Make the websites you want to see. Now, let's let Tyler finish the story.
Does the list exist.com? I'm sure that's out there somewhere.
Oh, Christ. Now I have actually make it.
Oh, and it's about which list? Which list, Michael?
I know domains are like $30, right? Anyway, continue.
Buy it.
I will say, that's. Let's do a side pet peeve. I loved the list. I loved the list being this random... I mean, I got an Urza's Blueprints once as my list. And if you don't know what that card does, it's one of the worst cards. Uh-huh. It's 6-mana artifact. You can tap it to draw a card. Okay, interesting. Maybe if you power it out, whatever. But then it has Echo, where you have to pay the cost again to just draw. So I like that being in my binder, having these random cards, and it being like, oh, the list is what brought it here. So I wish the list was back. But being at pre-releases and any type of thing in the store, one of my biggest pet peeves is, this sounds corporate now that I'm saying, my whole thing is making Magic more accessible for everyone. That's what budget content helps people do. If you can't buy cards, engage with the game, make a deck for $20, etc. So my pet peeve is being at a store and hearing people being like, well... I wouldn't do it that way. Or, you should put your lands over here. But little nitpicks that I can hear at a LGS, I start to fume. And I'm trying to focus on my game. I'm trying to hit the top, eight or whatever. And I'm fuming because I hear somebody on the other side of me telling someone who's their first pre-release ever being like, yeah, well, we're at turns and... you know, I mean, you didn't beat me and you could have killed me in a couple more turns, but turns are done. So if, unless one of us forfeits, you know, no one's going to get the pack. And I'm sitting there being like, it's this first person's pre-release. I've seen you at every pre-release. Just take the forfeit, man. Like, yeah. They're never going to come back to a pre-release ever if they're like, well, one time I did, and the person tried to strong arm me to to forfeit a match that I could have won. I'll never play this game ever again, because that happens.
It does happen, and I hate that too. I do like that when someone seems a little lost about what they're doing, and you hear someone offer to be like, hey, I can tell you're new. Is there anything that you'd like to ask or anything that you have do you want to see what I do when I do this? You know, that's a very different environment than, hey, I need to see your graveyard. Yeah. You know, to the left. Thank you. You're like,
ugh. Take it back now, y'all. Slide to the right. Yeah. No.
See, the trick is you find those people at the pre-releases, and then you intentionally tell them the wrong place to put their lands.
Yeah, back like old school, put the lands in front of the permanents.
Mm-hmm.
Make it fun. Don't make it.
I mean, the creatures have to walk over the lands to get to your face, right? That makes the most sense.
I would fall for that.
Honestly,
now.
That is a good point. Yeah, that is a good point.
You tell me that tomorrow, I'd be like, you're right.
Yeah. I heard you can't cast spells until you have enough lands to fill up your playmat. So, like, my games go long.
Yeah.
Make sure you put your mana rocks with your lands. And then when a board wipe happens, you do not get rid of them.
Yes.
Forget. It's genius.
Smart.
Dryad armor. In the lands. I said that so perfectly. But yeah.
Nailed it the first time.
The thing I ask often is just, and it doesn't come across, hopefully. I mean, maybe someone's listening and they're like, you asked me this and it did come across weird. But I just ask, how long have you been playing Magic? Because usually that doesn't assume, hey, I can tell you're new, or, well, nice here's break, what man. I would. It's just, how long have you been playing Magic? And usually for these new sets that are bringing people in, they'll be like, well, I've, you know, 20, 23 or whatever. Then every once in a while you get someone
23 years.
Yeah, and every once in a while you get someone.
And you still put your lands in the front.
Those are the people that put their lands in the front. Are the people who played in 2002.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or even 93.
Oh my God. I'll tell you. I heard 23 years ago and I instinctively thought 93.
No.
Oh my God, I'm
As
old.
Somebody who was born in 93, I am 23 years old. So, I mean, you are correct.
Yeah. I'm all,
happy birthday, Morgan. Out.
I'm also born in 93, and it's very interesting.
You are also 23 years old.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
So it was interesting.
23-year-olds.
A few years ago when they did the whole Magic 30, and I'm like, guys, I'm 23.
That's not enough time. Yeah.
Every birthday you
They're
add another buck to your last name.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Where were we?
We were talking about limited and the pet peeves they're in.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them, and I could keep going, but...
I mean, let's get another one. Get a quick one in.
Yeah.
Why not?
No, yeah.
About EDH. Give us one that's EDH-centered.
EDH-centered is... So, I played at an LGS last year, and it was... If you think writing about Magic, making videos about Magic, all that stuff is very glamorous, what it actually is you write and talk about playing Magic more than you actually play Magic. So
And then someone says you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I finally went to an LGS by me and played open play Commander. And nice. I played a 4-hour game.
Ooh.
With so many board wipes and so much, talking about what people could do or what they couldn't do and everything with no pre-match conversation. I've never played with these people in my life, and there was no conversation. Sat down, people just shuffling decks. And it's one of those things where they already know each other. You don't want to impede. I was playing Jolly Balloon Man. I love that deck. It's very fun. Mm-hmm. I just make little dinky things, and I make a lot of them. And
great commander.
I don't play Village Bellringer or other ways to go infinite. And it was hour like 3.5 into this game where one of the people that I was playing with said to another one of the people, when they removed Balloon Man, I think for the fifth time in this game, I was like, I got an engine and it's just this, and I've had to recast my commander basically every turn. And they were like, all right, well, here's why I did that, because he's going to go infinite and play this and play that and do that. And I'm like, no. I don't have any infinites in this. And if we had talked about this before we started this four-hour game, you would know that this is like bracket two. I took apart Winota to make this deck, and it's just fun. Enter the battlefield abilities. I'm going to dink people in the air for one with a balloon and then do some big attacks. But when people have that assumption, they see a commander and go, well, the worst possible thing is going to be the truth here, so I'm just going to kill this person mercilessly. And it's like, just have that 5-minute conversation beforehand, and it would have saved, like I said, this 4 hours. I was like, I'm going to go, I'll play several games and feel re-energized about Rookie Magic mistake. Again. And then I went
home. You are a brave man, Tyler.
Morgan, you looked so peeved the entire story.
I think because I'm just like picturing myself in your shoes, and I'm like, he just went in there like, these people didn't say a word to one another, and I've just been like, that is very brave, my man.
I
that'd be a tough one for me. For one, because I can't stop yapping. But for two, I'm like, the second everything starts happening, all these boards, like, I'm out. For those reasons, I'm out.
I need a card. I would confuse everybody and eat a card. I think I would need... Hour two, I'm like, what are we doing? I'm hungry.
Would you take the farewell and just do that Monster House gif where he just runs up and just eats it, runs away?
Yeah.
I don't know gif is. What is
Sure you've seen it.
I mean, I would do that based on that description. I would do the same thing. Yeah.
Sure.
It's farewell. How much could it cost? $5? Tell us, Tyler.
$9.
Again, I don't know much about rares and mythics, so that's not me.
You only play the commons.
Bless.
I
think it's time to get into the mailbag here, which is going to involve some bracket talk, which ties in perfectly because we mentioned the brackets. There's a bracket system. You can check it out on Wizards website. It's made by them. They're in charge of it.
It's good.
It's good.
Utilize
it. It's good. It gets the conversation started. That's the whole friggin' point. So do it. Have the chat. Be honest. Be open. Be real. Let's do it. So we have a mailbag to dive into right now, and we're going to get into it.
It's a bag. And diving into a mailbox would be really bad.
It would be, but it's a bag. And we're in the bag right now. Here it comes. Hey there.
Hi.
Starting off strong. So I'm the host of a playgroup with a clear intention of playing within the guidelines of Bracket 3, mainly to avoid too much salt and uneven matches between Bracket 3 decks and Bracket 4 decks. I have 5 bracket 3 decks and 1 bracket 4 deck, and the power level between the 3s and the 4 are abundantly clear via gameplay. A player in our group is consistently salty over a few of my bracket 3 decks. While there are indeed highly optimized bracket 3s, they are still 3s and wouldn't shake a stick at my bracket 4 deck, or anyone's bracket 4 deck for that matter. I don't play my bracket 4 deck in this group unless everyone wants to play at that level, so that deck is not the problem in question. The problem is that this said salty player is consistently telling me that my strong bracket 3s are in fact bracket 4s. I've explained to him that the bracket system is a healthy guideline to build intention and power limits, and not exclusively a quote power ranking system. There was obviously a wide range of quote power levels within bracket 3 guidelines. He disagrees and says they are in fact bracket 4s because they are so optimized. None of them have more than 3 game changers, infinite combos, land denial, stacked pieces, and they all fit perfectly within every guideline of the bracket 3 description and requirements. They don't eliminate players until turn 7 to 9. Am I the bolus for simply optimizing my bracket 3s to be competitive? Now there's a follow-up email that was sent shortly after. Follow up. I suppose I should mention that this is not a new player. I by no means would ever enjoy, quote, pub stomping noobs, and by no means do I dominate the win rate in our pod. This player is every bit as good as I am, and his decks are also highly optimized, usually sitting at around $1,000 each. I've repeatedly tried explaining to him that being a strong, optimized bracket 3 doesn't make a deck a bracket 4, and he disagrees. So let's talk about it. Tyler, you're our guest here, and I would like to get you to have first crack. But before we do that, let's think of a pseudonym for our writer here.
Ted Danson.
And Ted Danson wrote in and sent this beautiful email about his playgroup. And so, Tyler, take it away.
An actor?
Yeah. Ted Danson from Cheers and The Good Place and many other things.
Well, apparently everybody doesn't know his name, and that's okay.
How dare you? What's the matter with you?
I tried
Solani for so much less. That is crazy. How dare you? Okay, Ted Danson wrote in. Tyler Bucks. It's time to talk about it.
So while I was just talking about the bracket systems being awesome, and I do believe that, they are definitely not a checklist. So that, you know, there's some in my mind, I'm thinking of this of like, yes, it doesn't have this many game changers. Yes, it has X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. I do think something that is super optimized and doesn't have any game changers could be a bracket mm-hmm. four. I think that can happen. But what I do like about what Ted Danson has said in terms of this this message was the fact that it seems like they're giving the other person in their playgroup a lot of grace, where it's like, hey, I get that you know a lot and you've played a long time and we're on the same page on a lot of things. We're just off the page when it comes to this. I've experienced this before where people, you know, consider if something is very strong, it is pushing CEDH to some players out there. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's like, this deck is so good. It dude, that's CEDH. That's five. And it's uh-huh. like, well, maybe it had a good game. And that happens sometimes.
Thank you.
Threes have great games where they feel like a four, but that doesn't mean that they are CEDH. I think the biggest thing going for Ted Danson here is obviously the Silver Fox look, looking amazing still
How
to this day.
You?
But
How dare you?
At the same time, saying when the decks win the game between uh-huh. what seven and eight, turn seven and eight, that's a huge benchmark for these things. Like I said, a bracket three could power out a win, do everything correctly, and take it from there. But if it's a consistent seven or eight, you know, you can put together a win and somebody can stop that win, and it's actually the game ends by nine or 10 or so. Like, that's a really good gauge that I think fours can push the win rate a lot sooner there. So I don't know if they're necessarily the bull loss, but when you start throwing out what turn your deck can win, I don't know, Ted, I might be on your side here.
Okay. I love that you brought up that metric, because to me, I think that part stood out as well. Before I get into that, I want to ask Solani, Morgan, do either of you want to jump in right now? That sounds like
what
a Solani.
What do I think about Ted Danson?
No, that's not what I'm asking you. That's not what I'm
I
asking you.
I do agree that he is a silver fox. Any mailbag with Ted Danson, and it has to be the good place, right?
Oh, God.
Amen.
I do think that there's, to some extent, this feels a little ridiculous to me, right? They're like, oh, this is a bracket three. This is a bracket four. This is a bracket three. This is a bracket four. It's like, you
what
play
is it?
With each
Duck
other
season
a lot.
And Wabbit season.
Yeah. You should be able to tell roughly how strong this deck is relative to each other. Like, who cares if it's bracket three or bracket four? It's bracket three in your playgroup. Or bracket four in your playgroup.
You.
I don't know. Maybe you put a power level within the brackets. Maybe 10 points. And then it could be like a seven. I don't know. Just do what you want.
Huge point that you make here, Michael. You touch on something I very much want to talk about. Keep going.
Well, now that you've said that, I want you to talk about it.
Well, thank you. I will. The idea, to me, when it comes to the bracket system, it's like largely for getting a conversation started with people you're not used to talking to. It's to kind of set yourself up for a game where you're playing against people you don't really know yet. If you're going up against decks that you know regularly and you play against regularly, and then you could rank those, I think you have a better grasp on whether or not necessarily bracket three is the important metric, but rather where it lands in the playgroup. Now, of course, what I love about what Ted Danson said is that he said, you know, it wins between turns 7 and 9. And I think that's important, like, good to know. However, I will say that, like, when it comes to bracket 3, personally, even though the metric is clearly labeled on the bracket system that this is what the time is, I think throwing it up to 10, 12 is also reasonable. And so somebody expecting that when they hear bracket 3 would be surprised to see a game end so much sooner, you know? So I think that's also part of it. But ultimately, it does sound like Tyler said, there's a bit too much of a checklist going on. There's a lot of the checklist happening, none of the temperature taking. So the bracket system is a baseline conversation starter. And then it's not law. In your playgroup, when you're hanging out with each other all the time and playing the same friggin' decks, at some point, one deck, at the very least, will be identified as a bit of a boogeyman, and that automatically in the group throws it at bracket 5, basically. A deck that nobody wants to see hit the table or has to bring out their best decks to compete against. Yeah, you're the new benchmark. Like, it feels like an important distinction to have is, like, I completely don't see the bracket system as something that we need to be using within a playgroup once things have already been established as much as when we're getting introduced. A new deck coming to the table, absolutely discuss where the brackets land. But also, use some relative language. You know what I mean? Like, Ted Danson mentions he has several bracket 3 decks. Some are stronger than others. You know, Ted's running 5 bracket 3 decks. It says some of the strongest ones, yeah, sometimes can play like 4. But, like, that's okay. Maybe 5 numbers is too few on the bracket scale situation. Huh? Who knew? Maybe we need the 7. I digress. My point is, the checklist element is really the hard and fast rule of what he is trying to implement with the hosting of the playgroup. I just don't think that that's what you should be basing everything on, because we're also neglecting the pilot. You know, that's something that the bracket system doesn't get into, is that, like, nobody wants to show up to a game and say, yes, this is a bracket 2 deck, but also I'm pretty good, so I'm calling it bracket 3. You know what I mean? So if you're in a play group, you know each other a lot better. What?
Would it be hilarious if that happened, though? Like, you go up to a guy and you're like, listen, this deck, bracket 1 at construction. But when I play it, bracket 4, man. I'll tell you what, though.
I'm just optimized to the max.
It's not that crazy,
I have optimized
though.
My brain.
I build almost exclusively, technically, bracket 2. If we're going by everything in this list, my lists are bracket 2. Ever announce them as such? No. I always talk about playing bracket 3, maybe just a little high bracket 3 sometimes, because I know what I'm doing and I build with synergy. You know what I
mean?
Mikey,
that sounds so self-aggrandizing. I just can't believe that you're so not humble.
I don't need to be. I've been playing this game since I was a kid. I know too much about it. I spend too much time thinking about it to not know a little bit more than some of the people I'm playing against, which is, you know, it'll
happen. When
you
play for 23 years.
Yes, only 23 years. My point is, like, yes, I'll show up to a table. I'm saying this is bracket 3. But yeah, it's got no game changers, no infinites, no any of these things that would make it a bracket 3. It makes it a bracket 2. But I build it with some synergy and I put some reps in with it, and I know what I'm doing. I think that it definitely gets in there with my playgroup at the very least, right?
And something they've talked about before, they being the
Wizards or the committee.
Yeah, the commander committee, is the fact that brackets usually can play with each other. A 3 can play with a 4, a 4 sometimes can play with CDH, so on and so forth. They can have cross play. That's where I think when we get into something where Ted Danson's playgroup plays all the time, those variables might start to crumble away a little bit, where it's like, I'm playing a four with 3s, and I think it's a 3, but we've played this is a similar matchup every week now, and it's really showing that my 4 is outpacing these 3s, and I think it's a 3. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. Morgan, what do you think when it comes to this yes. whole situation with Ted Danson. And also, you already said Silver Fox, so you don't have to confirm that. I get where
you
you're coming
from.
You
don't have to say it again, but if you do feel like
I'll confirm
to.
It just so that the confirmation is out there in the world and our listeners uh-huh. don't think I'm doing anything shady. But I think generally what's happening Silver here Fox. Is, you know, just to play off of what everybody else already said, is that it's really easy for and better for people to kind of say like, oh, I want to put you in this bucket. Because everything else is like new and scary, and I don't want to associate you with that. I want to associate you with this because of the games we've had. And, you know, I don't like this deck. This deck is scary. It's a this, it's a that. The bracket system, I think one of its major flaws is that it makes those buckets a little too maybe melded together, depending. Like, to me, what I say to people, say MagicCon, for instance, when I played with some folks who I didn't know, I said, hey, I have an Urza precon with a Consecrated Sphinx. So I hope that that provides some context to folks who. At the time, I understood to have known Magic enough to know kind of pre-con level what something like Urza would be, an artifact deck where I'm kind of just dumping my hand out as much as I can with all these artifacts, and then I run out of gas if I don't get a draw spell, right? But I have a Consecrated Sphinx that could become a problem as the only game changer in the deck, and lo and behold, it becomes a problem. The Urza deck suddenly turns into a CDH deck, and I'm drawing 400 cards like every other turn. That doesn't mean my Urza deck is suddenly a four because it's optimized and because I say that happens in two games and, you know, I win because of this Consecrated Sphinx suddenly just totally murking everyone. I think that's what happens, though, in these smaller sample sizes, even with the groups that play together a lot, is that you start to see like, oh, Mikey's deck is just constantly, you know, getting these win percentages or whatever. It's got to be like one of the best decks ever, right? It's got to be at least a four. Put Mikey in with a group of strangers. He's probably going to win because this deck is so good. That's not what the brackets are for. The brackets have that internalized, like, you know, hey, guys, guess what? Here I'm showing up with Urza. It's a precon. I've got one game changer in here. It's a good game changer, but I mean, I'm probably not going to draw it, and I don't have any tutors. I don't have any. It's not part of a combo, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to get semantical with it, you can. But I'm providing you semantical? Semantic?
No, I love semanticular. No, I don't
Semanticular
know.
Semanticular is a good one.
I heard you say semantical, and I thought, hell yeah, that's a fun word.
Yeah, it's
semanticular.
Like romance for semantics.
Semantical is very fun. It might have a red squiggly under it, but it's fun.
Yeah.
I like semantical.
It's a bracket four word, guaranteed. I don't think
that's
anybody here can argue against
that's
that.
That's a great brand. Someone should make semantical.com, and I don't have to do
Shut
it
up,
because
Michael.
I just said it.
Stop with the friggin' websites. You make the websites you bring up.
You know what's wild, too?
Every time we say another URL, it's just cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching in my ears.
To you.
Just $30 to GoDaddy, and then we're rich and famous, and it's all good. You're good to go.
Morgan, you bring, like, a great point up with the precons, for sure. I definitely think when we talk about precons, like, first of all, there's the Sultai Arisen precon from Dragonstorm, Tarkir Dragonstorm this year. Right out of the box, just rocked one of my tables recently. My buddy just
the
got
the Terra
Magic.
Final Fantasy deck, that Mardu thing.
Mm.
The first time I played that, I knocked out my partner's Kenrith deck, like,
demolished.
Immediately.
It's
like,
so good.
It's near
pre-con,
CEH, you guys.
Precon doesn't mean what it used to anymore. However, I will say, let's just say for the sake of this experiment here, and I want to get through it.
The sake please, of Ted Danson's experiment.
Sure. Let's get through this. I'm gonna ask some questions, answer, and then I'll make my point. Can we agree that if Dockside Extortionist were legal in Commander again, that it would be on the Game Changer list? Morgan, yes or no?
Yeah.
Tyler, yes or no?
Yeah.
Michael Solani, yes or no?
Well, it really depends on the context.
I swear to God, you fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ken. Bleep
my
both
man.
Of them. Make it sound like I called him something worse. Anyway, Dockside Extortionist was printed in a precon. A precon that if it were available for purchase today and Dockside were on the Game Changer list and it were just coming out, would be officially have to be considered a bracket 3 deck. I know the Mystic Intellect deck because I bought that precon a long time ago when it came out in 2019, I want to say, and I tried upgrading it and eventually it became my Brash Taunters deck. But out of the box, I was excited to play it, and I cannot think of a bigger piece of shit deck than that fucking deck. Sorry, Ken, double time. That deck would be considered a bracket 3 deck because of one game changer. Dockside Extortionist. So, my question is...
Wait, do you mean piece of shit, like, Like bad, sorry,
bad,
Ken.
Bad, like not good. Sorry, Ken, also, yes.
Not piece of shit, like gremlin energy trolling your opponents. Sorry, Ken.
No. I mean that as in like one of the worst decks you could pick up as a precon and try to play because it does not work well. It was the least fun I've had playing a precon, and I tried a couple times because I really liked the deck. There were a lot of pieces that I liked in it, and it never came together. It never played well, and a lot of people cite it as one of the worst of that year and years to come. All that said, Dockside came from that deck. It would be considered a Bracket 3 deck just because of the singular game changer. Are we certain that game changers are necessarily the best way to have this discussion, to really have a bracket connected to game changers? Not really, but that is what we're doing now, and it's part of starting a discussion. And that is the point of the bracket.
I definitely don't think game changers are the benchmark for these things.
For sure.
And I can say that from an experience I had with a video. So my channel that I started, The Pillow Fort, again, it feels now it feels like too pluggy, but
thepillowfort.com.
I might need to get that.
We're up to 90, guys.
But I started that a decade ago with one of my friends in my play group still. And I did a Nekuzar the Mind Razor deck tech on there.
Nice.
And for the 10th anniversary of that video, I did a video of the deck that I made when I got back into Magic in 2019. I reassembled around that commander. So many cards are different from it and everything. But in that video, I classified it as a Bracket 4 optimized Nekuzar. There are four game changers. It's Bracket 4 on that level. But also, you know, something that Ted Danson didn't mention, and I don't know if we mentioned too much right now, is the fact that sometimes some commanders and some play styles are just kind of pushed.
Yes.
And Nekuzar is one of those commanders for me, unless it is just, hey, everybody draws a bunch of cards, we lose some life. It's kind of, you know, like what I was talking about with Shadrix, it's a little group huggy, everybody's doing stuff. There's that aspect, but also I know that I have Winds of Change and I have, you know, a Windfall and I have other ways, Jace's Archivist, other ways to make people discard their hand. And at the end of the day, if that's a little bit, say it's Bracket 3 and it's an optimized Bracket 3, what it's optimized in doing is stripping people from their what cards they have in their hands and dealing a bunch of damage to them and making this game a lot faster than you might not have thought it would be. And I saw that in real time with the deck when I was playing a 5-player game in my playgroup. All of us know each other very well. I played Nekuzar and I became the arch enemy by like turn 3. And closed out a 5-player game by like turn 7 or 8 by just doing that thing. And I know what that feeling felt like when I had people draw a bunch of cards. I forget what the it's a Dimir card from
Notion Thief.
From Ravnica, where you had Cypher and you cipher it onto a creature. And when you hit somebody,
Whispering Madness.
Yes. And I was able to clock this instance when I cast it first, everybody discarded, draw their cards, and one person in my playgroup said, oh, this is a pretty good hand, and me having to be honest and go, don't get too attached to it, because I'm ciphering it onto this Locust God Locust, and we're going to do it again. And that play style is not necessarily when people sit down and play Bracket 3 and want to do tuned and everything, and it goes, awesome. Discard that hand. And also, next turn, discard it 2 more times, and you know what? You're going to die before you even know what your next turn's going to look like. Sometimes that type of play style does lend itself towards a more Bracket 4 level.
Right. Because it ends up being like a resource denial strategy in that way too, which is not necessarily what land protection ends up being like when it's like no mass land destruction, but like resource denial in this way definitely lends itself to like a bracket four conversation.
Just resource, yeah, resource chaos, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's chaos, like, is a big one.
When you have a deck that there's like pinpoint times when you can interact, mm-hmm. that's when it starts pushing into bracket high, bracket three, bracket four is when I know, all right, I need to hold up a Swords, or I need to hold mm-hmm. up an Offer You Can't Refuse. And my bracket two and three don't necessarily just sit there and go, well, I always need to hold up interaction. If your deck consistently pushes wins that people need to hold up interaction, maybe it is a little bit stronger than you think.
There you go.
Ted Danson.
Thank you.
Take it
thank
sleazy.
You, Tyler. And also thank you to Ted Danson for writing in. We should have said that to begin with.
What an honor.
It is an honor.
Incredible, honestly.
Heartthrob of the 80s, I want to say, and beyond.
Heartthrob of the now. And then.
Come on. I'm saying
the
when he got,
you know, 23
his,
years ago.
His biggest break right. was, I don't know. Look.
No,
look,
the 80s was 30 years ago.
That's so funny.
That's the 30-year anniversary
it?
Date.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
And the 90s were 23 years ago. We're figuring
right.
it out.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, I was on a very famous TV show. And I forget what I was going to say about that, but Morgan got it, and that's it. That's all I needed. Let's go around the bend. Morgan, would you like to tell me, whisper it into my microphone ear, what your verdict is for Ted Danson? Is Ted Danson the Bolas or not? Now, Bolas is a little harsh here, I'll say, but I think they're bringing up their salty friend.
Way to poison the polling, Mike.
No.
Right.
I think this is because it's Ted Danson asking the question, but this is more about the friend being upset about it, right? This is the friend bringing it into, like, you know, it's a bit of both. So I think we should make sure that we discuss both attitudes here.
Yeah. So my overall vote, not the Bolas. We all have the salty friend. You have my empathy there. You're also Ted Danson. So, I mean, like, the points are just accruing and, like, the positive.
Talk about bias.
This is really hard for me to be like, you're the Bolas. If we do want to be Bolas's advocate, though, if we do want to share some blame on the communication, let's do that. Let's provide some context. Let's do the right thing. Let's talk about our deck's power level together. But otherwise, you're not the Bolas, Ted Danson. You could never be. And that's my final verdict. That's the vote. That should be everybody else's vote, by the way. I don't even think we need to go around this horn of the Bolas here, you guys. Like, I know what the answer is going to be. Just saying.
Well, let's put that theory to the test and go next. Tyler Bucks, where do you stand?
I don't think either are the Bolas, if I can say. I'm going to say the friend is Norm. If you haven't seen Cheers, this is all going to be over your head. But because sometimes some of us are more in tune with the Magic community and know and listen to the podcast and watch Gavin's explanation of the brackets and all that, like, and other people just get the cliff notes. There's some miscommunication going on, and you know, it's a little bit of a gray area, kind of like Ted's hair. And
I think you mean silver.
Sorry.
And but I think neither of them are Bolas's. Some of them are some of the other Elder Arcavios, or the, you know, they're just fighting each other a little bit in this.
They Victus Asmodi.
Asmodi, thank you. Yeah, Arcavios.
Asmodi.
Arcavios. That's where Strixhaven is. Oh my gosh,
that's
you
right.
get what I'm saying.
Arcades is the one you were reaching.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Nobody for Arcades Chromium. Nobody is Team Chromium.
No. Here's the thing. Definitely nobody's for Palladium Wars. Let's be real. Nobody's bringing up Palladium Wars.
Morgan, okay. What does the original Chromium do?
Okay, don't do this.
If you're such a Chromium fan, you
don't
should know.
Don't do this.
Chromium is a Esper.
Oh, a 7/7 Esper flying Rampager, I think.
Yes.
And you know that because
Flampager,
you're a little nut.
If you will.
I am a nut.
Tyler, you were saying.
No, I mean, that's basically all I was saying there. No, but that's
Solani's a nut. That's all we have to end with. Yeah.
Let's go Arcavios for...
Do I even get a vote?
Arcavios no. for a second, where we have, the Lorehold dragon and the Quandrix uh-huh. dragon. I think they're just a little bit at odds with their terminology. And sometimes... Mm-hmm. You know, you have someone's looking at a six, another person's looking at a nine, and you just need to get on the right side of the thing together. That's my two cents. Anyway, over to you, Michael.
Solani, you're up. What about you?
Look, sorry, I was just, it's okay. I was just a little bit baffled by that metaphor, but then I understood it after thinking about it.
There you go.
That's all I'm going for. Just listen and think. People, come on. That's my 2026 mantra. Listen,
don't go that far.
Look at you.
Don't make it impossible.
Listen and think.
Look at you with the tall order for everybody listening. Listen.
I've been trying
to
get people to care about context for how long have we been doing this podcast?
I'm not 23 telling
years.
You.
For 23 years.
Since I was
I've
born.
Been trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And no one cares about the context. I think Ted Danson is kind of bolus-y, because I think Ted Danson should know that if someone says your deck feels like a four, you don't throw that away by saying it's a three. Like by the technical rules, mm-hmm. it's technically a three, mm-hmm. sure, but you're technically stomping their face in. And I know that you're not pub stomping noobs because you specifically said it in the message, but if your deck feels like a four, then it is a four. You know, if it walks like Ted Danson and it talks like Ted Danson,
you're on primetime TV.
It's probably as dreamy as Ted Danson.
I'll say this: I have a Taysa Opulent Oligarch deck that's 100% as two as you can be, bracket two for sure.
But you're playing it, so it's actually a five.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Literally, Olivia Gobert Hicks has ported the list over to her decks and plays it on her channel, Commander at Home and Elder Dragon Hijinks. She's played a couple games. Go take a look at that deck list and tell me if that's a two. That thing can zoom. All right. I know what it does. I know. And I would never, if somebody said feels like a bracket three to me, I'd never be like, well, actually, it's a bracket two. No, 100%. It's a three. It's a three right now. It's running the fucking table. Sorry, Ken. What do you
think? Mike, give me your best actually.
No. So we're just going to...
Do it. Do it.
I'm in the middle of something. I'm doing a podcast. Okay, but the point is, I'm with Solani. There's a smidge of bolus. There's a very dismissive element here from Ted Danson that I don't quite agree with. Someone is coming at you saying, hey, I think your decks are a little too powerful to be considered bracket three. And frankly, leaning on the technicality of it all, to me, seems a little suspicious. I'm very sorry to put it that way. I don't think that they're necessarily bracket. You could be like, they're high bracket threes. Yeah, well, in the right context, a high bracket three is a low four, and that's all there is to it. Again, the problem with the bracket system is that it's not meant to be completely the end-all be-all. It is the beginning of a conversation. It is a conversational tool to see if you guys maybe can get to the point where you're having the best time together. And sometimes, frankly, a lot of the time, you won't. But when you're with a play group of players that you play with frequently, you are the host of this play group and have many people coming over and you say these are the guidelines for three, but people are saying this doesn't really feel like the guidelines for three are really making us match up. I think there's more to the conversation. Defaulting to the specifics, defaulting to the semantics of what the rules are in bracket three and what that means does not make it bracket three. There is, Michael, I swear to God, context to all of it, and you need to have a conversation together about what do you mean by bracket three? Just these rules, or is there more? Because I'm telling you, it feels like not a bracket three. What am I basing that off of? Have a more productive conversation rather than shutting down your friend, your peer, your playgroup mate. Don't shut them down by being like, it's a three. I've done the work on it. It's a three. It can be a four. You might be playing so well, and three game changers is all you need.
You might be Mike Carrozza.
Yeah, I'm really fucking good at Magic. Sorry, Ken. I lose all the time. I lose so often. It would suck to win constantly. But someone's got to do it, and I just 3-0'd three pre-releases in a row, so it's not a big deal. But, you know, don't even...
Whoa. Why didn't you? Why didn't you lead with that?
You can tell me where to put my lands.
I had a streak of 3-0ing seven in a row. It's not a big deal.
Oh my god!
That was just the last one. The one? Oh. No, hold on. 11 in a row.
Dancing.
11 in a row, and then I lost 2-1, and then another streak of 3-0. Don't worry about it.
Oh, you lost 2-1. Go fuck yourself.
Hey,
sorry,
just
Ted.
1 out of 15. Thank you. 1 out of 15 ain't bad. So here's the thing. Pretty good.
I have one more because what you were mentioning made me think about Ted Danson again, which, you know, happens often.
Is that a problem?
Happens often, but
dreamy.
Every once in a while as well, when it comes to playing in a play group that you play with all the time, some decks are just better against other decks. Like, you never if you're playing... You know, I forget what Ted said. Well, how many bracket three decks did they have?
Five.
So
yeah, that was a very mathy part of the thing. So I was very confused for a while there, but go on.
You never know if you're just in a bad matchup as well. I know I have some engine-y decks, you know, that are in the 2 or 3 scenario, and then somebody plays their mono green stompy deck. And, oh, wow, now I'm having to block with these one power mana or one power value engine cards. And now I feel like I'm being stomped. But actually, we're on a similar level if I played something that had bigger creatures. Now I'm not being attacked. A lot of stuff is going on here, Ted. And, you know, definitely don't.
If that is your real name.
If this person,
could you imagine?
If this person's name is Ted, or even Ted with the last name starting with D, that's going to be crazy for them.
I can't reveal.
Oh,
it's the actual Ted Danson. He actually wrote in. You just nailed it.
there's that aspect too. I only say this because from just my own personal thing. Like I said, I didn't even say this. I've been playing since 2012, which is what, only 4 years ago.
23 years.
It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Last month. And I've been playing with a lot of the same people. And then we have had bracket conversations after all these years, and it has helped. You never know that sometimes just, oh, I get it. Like I said, I had that myself with Nekuzar. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this deck that I thought was on the same plane field is not, because now all four other players are having to kill me. So you never know. And I guess that's the only advice I would give to Ted is just, it is not a hard and fast rule. And you that can even be liberating for Norm in your play group, your other friend, be able to understand and give them some grace too, where it's like, they're coming at this in a similar mindset where it's, we don't fully know. Maybe we have bad matchups. Maybe we have bad synergies against another thing. And now the water is muddy. Just give some grace. Unfortunately, it's not, you're not going to be able to press a button and it tells you who's right and who's wrong. But who knows? Maybe whenever your friend busts out, you know, Norm, the other person in this playgroup, when Ted busts out their really good deck that just stomped you, bring out your other really good bracket three deck, and now that is what you know to combat with. I don't know. I just don't know. Until I'm at
there's
the bar,
no,
I don't
science.
Know what's being done.
Yeah.
Well,
there's
I'll
no
tell you that
science.
we do have the right and wrong button that we can press here. That does exist within our context.
That is
Mikey
the whole context.
He's the holder of that button. We can press that button for the right and wrong.
I can press it.
We have that power.
Well,
yeah.
I can't.
Just saying.
What are we going to do?
We're the arbiters.
Yeah.
It does sound like we're tied.
I'm just a guest.
We are tied.
I can't press the button. I'm a guest.
Well, see,
I,
guest
you
gets
could,
a
maybe you
could
press the button, Mikey. You can get him. Like, press
I
the
can
button.
Press the button. I'll press the button. I'll
Let press Tyler the button. Press the button.
I'll send the button over to Tyler. Tyler, you can press the button. You decide, bolus or not. Period.
No,
I personally say very little bit, tiny bit.
Not tiny. The bolus.
And there you have it. That's the verdict. And there it goes.
The button has been pressed.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Before we get out of here, and we're gonna go around the bend and ask everybody where we can listen to them, find them, do anything, and that's gonna start with our guest. Tyler saves you bucks. Buddy, can you tell everybody where they can find you? Get their social media handles out there as well.
Yeah. So I'm at several places as the Tyler Bucks. I'm other places as the Pillowfort, Pillowfort MTG. But mainly, if you're on YouTube, search The Pillowfort by Tyler Saves You Bucks. I do as much budget content on there as possible. I write articles for EDH Rec, and I make some of those into videos as well. So if you prefer one or the other, please feel free to do whichever one that you prefer. I also do sketch comedy over there with my childhood best friend, Logan. We do sketches about magic, and we just had one recently about the TMNT mix-up with the pre-release packs. And at this point, it's on the cusp of hitting over 100,000 views on YouTube.
Very fun.
So if you want to be one of those people, you can jump over there and see that as well. And just as an aside, it's a dream to be here. Morgan and a lot of people know in the EDH Rec sphere. EDH Rec is my favorite magic website. It has been for 23 years. So just being,
since the beginning of time,
yes, since the dawn of time. So just being able to talk about magic with even more people is such a delight. So if you want to come talk magic with me on my channel, feel free to do that. You can even become the lord of the tiny chair of tiny victories. People can't see the visual of this, but I have a
he is literally holding up a tiny chair.
I can see it, and I want to sit in there.
Yes, and if you want to sit on this tiny throne, you just leave great comments or do something nice in the community, and you can be put on the tiny chair of tiny victories until someone dethrones you as well. And that's all I want to bring to Magic, is just that fun and whimsy again. Anyway, that's
you can dig it.
You better have a Marchesa deck. You do realize you need one, right?
Logan has one, who you can see on that sketch comedy video as well.
So make sure to follow Tyler on all socials and go check out video sketch comedy videos, budget content videos, magic videos over at the Pillow Fort. Follow Tyler on the all platforms, but most importantly on EDH Rec, where you can check out his articles by Tyler Saves You Bucks. I'm going to throw it to Morgan. Morgan, what would you like people to check out?
I am forever lurking and passing on bad/hot takes on Blue Sky as Indigo Gentleman. And I just want to shout out Tyler and the rest of our writers for EH Rec for making some really cool stuff. We're always making content, so keep doing that, y'all. And check out their stuff. Read the articles, read some words, and watch some cool videos from some cool people, from some real people, not some AI machine people. And say some nice stuff in the comments, and keep kicking ass, you guys. I love you and appreciate you.
Hell yeah. Solani, where can people find you? What do you want them checking out?
Hi, my name is Ted Danson. You can catch me on Cheers, 8 p.m., 7 Central. I'm just kidding. My name is Michael.
Wait,
you can check me. No, I'm actually Ted Danson.
Twist.
It was me the whole time.
M. Night Shyamalan.
And I voted myself to be the bolus. We've got my website, gamesfreaksa.info, where you can check out everything I do. That's the letters essay, not the word. And you can also check out my YouTube channel there, which has stuff. I got to update it eventually. Again, it's been
you
a while.
Post some new
I
videos.
Recently.
They're
yeah,
fun.
I spent a month working on recommander.cards, recommander. So go ahead and check that out.
Good website.
It's better recs than EDH rec. Morgan, am I allowed to say that?
What the hell, man? Ken, cut
that
out.
If it's true, say it. Like, I will tell you that we don't mind a little friendly competition. If we get usurped, it's our fault, I think, is our kind of mantra.
They're actually for different purposes. EDH Rec is really good at telling you how to get started with the deck. This is more the final last steps part of it. It's better at, but check it out and check out my stuff at GamesFreakSA.info. Passing it back to you, Mike.
Before we get to me, I will say Solani's videos of the decks he made are very funny. They're smooth as butter, and he's one of the most creative deck builders I know. And so if you haven't watched any of these videos, you should absolutely do it. There's one where you've got like eight commanders or seven different commanders. I think it's eight. And then you've got like the Zaxara X deck where you pay zero and X. There's a lot of really fun stuff on that channel that you should check out. And I did use recommender.cards on one of my decks, and it spotted me two new cards that I ended up picking up for my deck. So check it out. Use the stuff and enjoy it. As for the podcast, you can follow us on Blue Sky at Am I the Bullcast. Give that a follow. I post the episodes there all the time. We're on YouTube. If you subscribe there, you'll find the videos in your feed of the audio podcast. The video is just our logo and then a little thing that says the title of the episode and then a little thing that says, thanks for watching. I really appreciate it. And that's it. It's very simple, very bare bones, but you can watch us on YouTube. But you can also follow me at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, wherever you can find stuff, I'll be there. That's my name. I write for EDHREC.com. Am I the Bolus is my article series, so be sure to check that out. I have some comedy dates. Check that out, too. I don't have any that I want to plug right now, but keep an eye out for maybe a little bit of something in late April over in Niagara Falls, possibly. We'll see. I'm not
going over
yet.
Niagara Falls.
That's right. I'm a daredevil
now, and
that's what I'm going to get up to.
Oh, my God.
So that's it. I'm getting in one of those barrels, and I'm not going to die.
And on a cliffhanger or a waterfall hanger.
and a water hanger it is. And shout out once
Sharp
again to
bottom.
Our sponsors. We got cardsphere.com and Bonebox Games. And also shout out to Angelo and his playgroup, especially to Brandon, who sent us the bowl ring and tokens of Brandon from Hot Pepsi Armageddon, our live episode at Commander.
Oh, that's Steel. True.
And
right over here.
I've got an Armageddon here that says drink Pepsi, take nap. And it's very honestly what I expected from Brandon, which is just Sharpie on an Armageddon printing. And it just says drink Pepsi, destroy all lands, take nap. And frankly, I've been challenged to put this in a deck of mine, and I will be finding the spot for it. And in true Brandon fashion, I will not have a plan in place for after I play Armageddon. Because that is the point for him, and I honor our listeners. So that'll do it. I'll be the Bolus at some point, but for now, it's time to scoot the day. We're getting out of here. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
See you around.